Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas. Today I am joined by Alex West. She shares vulnerably with us about business startups and failures, a simple way of practicing family worship, and God kindly revising our definition of success. Let's dive in. Alex, thanks so much for just taking the time to be on this podcast today. You recently became a mom to your fourth child, so I know that time is like a precious commodity. So tell us a little bit about your world, your family, your passions, and where you live.
Sure. And thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to get to talk with you today. Like you said, I'm a mom of four. I am married to Robert. We've been married for just over 11 years. And we have Bethany, who is 9, Monty is 7, Jacob is 5. And then our newest addition is Abigail Rowe. And she was born just over a month ago. And we live in Richardson, Texas, which is just north of Dallas. And yeah, passions, you know, we have a lot of family in town, and we actually live in the same neighborhood as my brother and sister, and we have 11 little cousins all running around the neighborhood and getting to hang out. So that's where a lot of our time is spent. It's really special and really fun. So
I love that. So fun. And you said there are occasional days when a cousin or somebody shows up at your back door at the like early in the
8
morning.
8 a.m., bright and early. Bright and bushy-tailed.
I love it.
Yes, it is. It's fun. It's so fun to see them get to grow up together and have friendships together. So it's been a huge blessing in our lives.
I love that. So Alex, we met through a mutual friend several years back who's also been a guest on the podcast. And I know at that time you were actively working on a business venture. And I want you just to take us back to the origins of that and kind of the beginning stages.
Sure. So I ran a startup called Knit, which was a energy beverage designed for pregnant women. So that came about when I had just given birth to my second son, Monty, and my sister was pregnant with her first. And we were in the living room one day, and she kind of threw out there, "Man, I just wish there was an energy drink for pregnancy. Coffee grosses me out. Stuff has a bunch of artificial, you know, you can't drink Red Bulls or whatever when you're pregnant." And so right. She's like, "I just really wish there was something out there." And my husband and I had actually also on the side, Whitney, I don't know if you know this, we had a coffee roasting business for a couple of years. And through that, my husband had met a guy in the beverage industry and kind of on a whim just reached out to him and had said, you know, threw this idea out there of an energy drink for pregnancy. And what do you think about it? What would it take to get started? And what would we need to do? Well, lo and behold, a couple of days later, he came back and said, "You're crazy. You should have gotten me to sign a non-disclosure agreement," which is pretty much a document saying they wouldn't steal or share the idea. Right. He was like, "It's a great idea, and I would love to help you get started." So he got some equity, some ownership in the business, and his work was to help us formulate this energy drink for pregnancy. And it was a really slow start. It was a lot of going back and forth. We would open our front door and have a package like of unlabeled bottles with different samples of things he was trying. And so that was, you know, like, the first couple of years.
I picture like him like brewing all these things in his lab or something. Like
absolutely.
Literally
in
like
his home. Yeah. He was a food scientist. That was his job.
Wow.
And so that's what he did. And he was very passionate about it and loved it. And he came up and, you know, it was a lot of going back and forth, but eventually ended up coming with this awesome formula. And we had three different flavors, and we were able to like raise money from friends and family and get it going. And so that was kind of the first, it took a long time. It was probably, that whole process was probably the first, you know, 3 years or so So that was kind of how we got started.
Wow. So I remember seeing you at some point during this, and things are taking off. There were some promising offers. You guys felt like there was progress being made, but it didn't quite pan out like you guys had hoped for or even were told that it would happen. So what took place after that?
Yeah. So, I mean, anybody doing a startup knows it's like one of the hardest things ever. And, you know, while we were making a lot of steps forward, but even along the way, there were a lot of hard things. We actually had sort of a major conflict with those investors, with the food scientists and a couple of other people who were helping us. We had a big conflict with them, but, you know, we were able to work through that. And the Lord was really kind and opening doors there and just bringing restoration of relationships and all of that. And then we had an issue with like our manufacturer, you know, like we couldn't make all of these products.
Right.
So we had to,
you mean you weren't doing it in your kitchen?
Right. Yeah. No, we can't do that. So we had, we were using this place to, it's called co-packing they would, you know, be our packer and bottle it and do all of those things. They ended up going out of business. And it was, so there were some really hard things, but there were also these really, like you said, there were a lot of steps forward and a lot of people were really interested in our drink. I was going to all of these pregnancy expos and letting people sample them and try them. And people were lining up at our booth and they loved them. And we also landed finally our first sort of big grocery store account. That's in food and beverage, you know, we had gotten into a couple of local coffee shops and sort of started making our way there. But what you really want to do is get in on the shelves in grocery stores. And we were finally able to land an account. And they had asked me to try, it's a smaller, like a natural grocer all over Texas. And they had asked me to visit each one of their stores and train their employees who was over, you know, the specialty beverage.
Wow.
And to get, you know, because a pregnancy energy drink is sort of a
niche market kind of.
Niche market, yeah. And a hard, you know, you use the word like pregnancy and energy beverage and it's kind of like, what? And so
right.
They asked me to visit each store and travel and I did that and it was so great. Everybody received it really well. And then that was, you know, another huge blow was after I had done all of that, they dropped us. And it was just an email of, I'm sorry, we're really busy at this time. We don't have room on our shelves. Try again in a year. And we were like, okay.
So wow. That was
really discouraging. And, you know, we had planned and forecasted and sort of geared up for this inventory that we would need for the store. And so we were pretty discouraged by that. But then one of our food scientist friend had recommended that we go to this. It's almost like it sounds kind of funny, but a speed dating with different retailers. So you go, you set up a booth and all of these retailers come to you and you pitch them your beverage. And so you have several, you know, 20-minute pitches that you get to lay out your product and all of those things. And it was in Chicago.
Wow.
And Robert, my husband and I were actually able to go together, which was amazing. So we went out, we flew out, we met with, you know, probably 20 or 30 retailers and we were received really well. Again, everybody loved us and loved the drink and we made great contacts. And so we came out of that with just this really high momentum of I was so sure, you know, this is it. I was actually looking back over this past week kind of through journals in that time and just praising God for what he had done and how he had opened these doors. But the reality was, you know, we came back and I started following up with these accounts and, you know, no one would return my phone calls and I couldn't get these people who were so interested had all, you know, all of a sudden just gone totally silent. And, you know, it was really discouraging. And, you know, a couple of other events happened. I think I mentioned earlier, you know, we had some issues with our manufacturer. So we had to actually change manufacturers.
Wow.
And when we did that, we had to do a couple of trial runs just to make sure that they could, you know, run it and we could get a clean product, that there wouldn't be any bacteria growing in the bottles or anything like that. Well, it turns out they could not. And just the ingredients in our drink were really specialty and I guess sensitive. So their like sterilization process wasn't compatible with our drink. And so we had invested a lot of time and money in getting supplies and all of that stuff to our manufacturer that, and that fell through. And then by that time it was 2020. And so COVID hit. And, you know, at that point it was, I had to make the decision of, okay, do I want to raise more money and ask family and friends for more money for something that now, you know, the world is shutting down.
Right.
And at that point it was, you know, just through a lot of prayer. I mean, it was, that part was kind of the Lord's kindness of, you know, things had been sort of slowly crumbling and I had, you know, it seemed like there was really no way to make it work. And that was just kind of the last straw of, okay, this is not going to happen. We had just have to shut it down. And so that was, yeah, that was really painful. But COVID, yeah, that was kind of the last, I guess, what would you say? The last nail in the coffin. I knew the door was closed and we were not going to continue to move forward with it.
Wow. Okay. So here you are in this place. This is a couple years ago. You walk with God, you seek him, you pursue. And I know you and your husband, Robert, you guys have pursued his guidance in your life in general, but also in this process. So how did you come to terms with this really painful reality that something you had invested so much money and time and hope into was not a success in the way that we typically define the word?
That's a really good question. And I think the words you use, painful reality, is very true. And it's, you know, to be completely transparent, it's not something that I have really been able to fully reconcile. Like I said, even reading back over through my journals, you know, it brought about all kinds of emotions. I was laughing at some of the things I said. I was weeping at some of the prayers I prayed that, you know, I feel or that were unanswered. But ultimately, I think what I have found a lot of freedom in is that the failure that the world would say, you know, my business was a failure, does not mean that I was being disobedient to the Lord. And that, like, again, that's a hard, it's a hard truth to reconcile. I think we so often relate success with doing the right thing and following God. And if I follow God, well, then all of these things are going to pan out exactly how I planned. And this was a very clear example to me of how that doesn't always necessarily ring true. And I, you know, like you said, Robert and I were really seeking the Lord during that time. And I can look back and that is one of the things that's really reassuring to me is in reading my journals and seeing my prayers is, you know, I did have a posture of truly wanting to obey the Lord. Now, obviously, there was not, I'm not saying I was perfect in the whole process. The Lord was actually very kind to bring out a lot of sin in my life through it. I had to wrestle with a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear of man. And the Lord did a mighty work in my life through it. So if that's, you know, if that's the only thing that came out of NIT, that's also another hard thing for me to say, that if that's the only thing that the Lord wanted to come out of NIT, then in his eyes, it was a success. Him drawing me near to him through that. It's easier said to say that than to actually believe that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But he's was really kind to reveal a lot of junk and sin in my life that needed to be removed. And he was very, it was very painful, but it was, he was very kind to do that. And you know, his ways are so much higher than ours. And I have been able to find a lot of freedom in just simply trusting in that. There's no, you know, I think we just have to take Jesus for what he says when he's like, don't worry about tomorrow. I think there's just a lot of freedom in taking the Lord for his word when he tells us not to worry and that he cares for us and will provide for us what we need. He showed that, he showed me that to be true over and over again throughout this whole process, even though it didn't end up how I wanted. And he was also really kind to bring other people, like saints who have gone before us, who have experienced the same thing. You look at John the Baptist. Hmm. Talk about a man who was obedient to the Lord and how his life did not end how anybody probably expected.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Elliot is a woman who I really look up to and admire, a missionary, and her life again looked very differently, I think, than she had anticipated, but yet continually proclaims God's faithfulness and goodness, even though he walked her through some really hard and scary things. And so, yes, I think obedience and trusting God is the most important thing. And that is the definition of, you know, quote unquote success that as Christians we need to cling to, and not the earthly treasure and like the earthly successes that we are often measured by.
That's so good. I was just thinking as you're saying that, my dad had a quote recently that he said to me. He said, "The goal of godly parenting is not to raise godly children. Of course, you desire that, but the goal of godly parenting is to be godly parents." And it just made me think about what you're talking about obedience, and that really shifts the definition of success when we think about the success not being the outcome, but rather us being faithful to obey God in the journey. You said the other day when we were talking, you said, "I believe that I obeyed even though what I created ultimately failed." And I thought that was a really, really powerful thing to just kind of like plant yourself on and say, "I can stand by this." Even though like the product itself isn't something that's on shelves today that I do, I can still say that I believe that I faithfully walked with God through it.
We'll be back in just a minute after a word from our sponsor.
Today's episode is sponsored by Eric Lehman at Thrivent Financial.
Wendy and I became members with Thrivent a couple of years ago, right before I went skydiving. And then she sent me on a ski trip by myself with some buddies. So I have the feeling that she wanted the life insurance policy just in case things went awry, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Listen, I am married to someone I know is an adventurous spirit who I think you said the other day, if there's not a chance I could die, it's not exciting for me, or something along those lines. But back to the ad, okay? So seriously, we really are big fans of Thrivent. Not only does Thrivent offer a range of financial services from, like we talked about, life insurance to retirement plans, they also encourage you to give back to your community through something called action teams.
And through these action teams, they actually provide resources and funds to help you meet needs in your local community. So it's really nice. I am being held hostage right now, so this is a cry for help. Somebody help me.
Stop it. So if you're interested, look into a Thrivent near you at www.thrivent.com.
Help me.
And now back to the conversation.
Now, you also said something that I wanted just to talk about a little bit more, but you said, "I mourn the loss every day." And so I wanted just to ask you a little bit about that, because, you know, it's easy to kind of talk about where you are now and what God has taught you and where you even see the value in it. But are there still times that you ache about it? You question, you know, why didn't that happen, or wrestle through that?
Absolutely. Yes. And I think I mentioned I've been reading through my past journals, and I was actually reading with my husband this morning a journal entry from when we went on that Chicago trip and met with all of the vendors, and everybody was really excited. And my journal entry just talked about that how excited I was and how the Lord had heard so many prayers. And I was one of the huge goals of KNIT was for me and my husband to be able to work together. We wanted to have a business together. We work really well together. And that was our prayer, was that he would be able to leave his job and we would be able to do this. And this would be our family business. And we just had this whole narrative, you know, written in our heads. And I read that prayer this morning and I just wept on the couch with him that it has gone unanswered. But now, can I sit here and still say that the Lord is faithful? Absolutely. I mean, our sweet fourth Abigail Rowe was the sweetest little surprise of the Lord. And if you had told, and if you had told me, you know, 2 years ago when I was in the thick of building a business that I don't think in my flesh, I wouldn't have chosen that because I wanted that. And now I've crossed over and I'm here and I'm living in the, you know, the newborn fog, which is very heavy right now. But I wouldn't, like, I just look at, sometimes I just look at her and it's such confirmation that the Lord's plans are so much better than ours. I wouldn't have chosen that on my own, if I'm honest. I wouldn't have. And what a kindness of the Lord for him to not always give us what we ask for.
Yeah.
Like that in itself, like I can still say that God is faithful, even though I'm mourning. I still mourn the loss of Knit. I still wish that we could have it. And I'm not saying that it's like, well, now I have my baby. And so I don't think about it anymore. It's not that. It's just that, wow, the Lord's plans are better. It still hurts to submit to them sometimes.
Yeah.
It still is uncomfortable. It doesn't feel natural. I have to, my flesh craves something else. But in it, does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Like just to see the Lord's goodness and kindness in it, in his loving discipline, and just my ways are better. And I'm going to do that. So yes, all of that to say, I still mourn. I still have a lot of what ifs. I still go back and what did I do wrong? What could I have done? Which is just like so opposite of the gospel, isn't it? You know, what else could I have done? That's not, so I, there are thoughts and lies that I have to battle and fight a lot, but ultimately it is still something that just pushes me near to the Lord. And my prayer is, Lord, help me to trust and obey you today, whatever you have called me to today, and help me to put everything else out of my mind.
Wow. Yeah. That's so good. So one thing I want to touch on is that, and just get it, give our listeners a little bit of a background and, you know, background story, context, is that, your family has had an impact on our family, in a really neat way. We've talked about this, but you guys allowed us to stay in your home when you guys were out of town, and, we didn't really even know you other than through our mutual friend. And my husband's father was in the hospital. We knew he had a few days to live, and we were able to stay in your home. And because of, you know, it being 4 hours away, it was a huge blessing for us to have not just a room, you know, room and board, but to have a place that our kids could play with toys and that we could rest and feel, you know, comfortable in a space. And it was a tremendous gift. And so, and then fast forward to a little bit later after that, we got to spend a little bit of time with you guys at the beginning of the pandemic of all times. But I got to just observe your family devotional routine, and I just love the simplicity and just the very accessible nature of what you guys do together. And I would love for you just to share a little bit about that, because I think it was something that I thought, man, so many families think like, I don't know how to disciple my kids. I don't know how to make Jesus the center of our family. And what you guys did was just so beautiful and fun and, just authentic and fit the craziness of life. And so I just wanted you to be able to share a little bit about that.
Oh, well, I love hearing that. And I want to start off by saying that our family, we call it family worship in our house. Our family worship time is by no means perfect. And like you said, it is very simple. Our goal is to do it every night, and that definitely does not happen. But yeah, pretty much what we do, and you've seen it. And so if I'm missing anything, feel free to add.
Yeah.
But we sing a song, and my husband plays the guitar, the ukulele. And I want to encourage, I feel like that oftentimes is kind of intimidating for people, the music aspect and singing. But what I have learned with kids is that they do not care. You can put music on a speaker, you can sing a cappella. It doesn't matter. You don't have to, it's not this production.
Right.
And so we just sing a song, and then we pretty much pick a passage of the Bible and we read it. And a shift, which Whitney, I don't even remember if we had done this yet, but one of the things that we do, we kind of made an intentional shift to, was we read out of the real, I don't want to say the real, that sounds bad, but we read out of the Bible, not like a children's Bible. And cool. Yeah, we use the children's Bible for other things, but for family worship, we kind of had a shift a couple of years ago. We decided, you know, God has some serious promises and really powerful things to say about his word. And so we just were like, let's just read this. And so we just read a short passage to our kids. Doesn't matter how old they are. They're a little bit older now, but started, but you know, our youngest was 2 or 3.
Yeah.
And a lot of it goes over his head. And one thing that my husband and I remind each other a lot, we say this to each other often after family worship, is we say water running over a rock. It's water running over a rock, because so often in our family worship, like I said, they are not perfect. Mm. Somebody is upset, or somebody is, you know, thirsty, or there's distracted, not wanting to listen. But yes, I just want to encourage other families is that it is water running over a rock. That's why we have the goal of just doing it every day. Not because, like, not a legalistic reason, but we want to do it as often as possible, because we want our children to be, you know, that water to just slowly smooth out those rough edges. And for us too, right? Like,
absolutely. But it's like the life rhythms, right? It's like about making it more than something you do, but about like it being like the fiber of who your family is.
Yes. Yeah. And it's just, sweet time at the end of the day to just connect. And we try to pray. We pray together, you know, every night. And we try each night to do a different topic, so it's easier for our kids to kind of know, you know, what to pray for. So whether it's missionaries or our church or a friend who doesn't know God or something like that, we kind of focus on that each night so that they can have a little more direction of how to pray. So yeah, like I said, really simple, and it doesn't take long. And a lot of times it's a mess, but like just again, just trying to obey God.
I love it. I love the simplicity of it. And thank you so much, Alexis, for sharing all of this with us and just even peeling back the curtain on some of the raw parts of the behind the scenes of your journey over the last couple of years. And yeah, just walking us through what that's been like. So it's been a joy to have you, and I'm excited for people to get to hear this episode.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. It was hard thinking back and like reflecting on all of it, but even now the Lord is kind, and it was just such a great reminder of his faithfulness and his sovereignty, right? He loves us a lot.
That's cool. Yeah. Almost like you kind of like reflected in a, maybe
it was.
Like,
it was really good for me.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
My husband kept saying, "You, this is really good for you."
Oh, good. So it wasn't like too mean that I was asking you to like look back at all this stuff. Yeah.
Well, it's the blind leading the blind.
Speak for yourself. I'm not blind.
You're more blind than I am.
That's true. My vision is terrible.
If you could steal any one thing and not get in trouble for it, not get caught, what would you take?
Mona Lisa. I don't know.
Come on.
I know, it's so cliche. Steal any one thing and not get caught for it and not get in trouble? I mean, what if I stole like this... like a huge diamond ring. I don't even really like flashy jewelry at all, so I wouldn't even use it.
But then you had to sell it.
Yeah. I don't know. Art theft is kind of intriguing to me.
Art theft.
Yeah, I mean,
but the only way to get the value out of it is then to like turn around and sell it to on the black market.
That's the thing is like, aren't there theories about like art thieves and how like true, you know, art thieves don't really do it to like make money. They do it because they want to like build a collection, you know?
But you only get this one.
I know. So
So you wouldn't have a collection. You'd have one art piece.
Which, what if it was amazing? Like some famous Rembrandt painting or...
But you could never tell anyone.
Can I tell you? Can I show you? Can we like put it up in our room? What if I put it up in a room and I was like, hey, yeah, it's just this print that looks really close to real or something. And I didn't tell anyone that it was actually the real one.
I don't know if you could get away with it.
I'm trying to think of anything else that would be really exciting to steal. Some sort of a tiara would be cool. I'd give it to Charlotte.
These are the lamest responses.
What else? Okay. I mean, but here's the thing. Like
tiara?
I don't know. I was just thinking of something cool that like our kids could use as dress up, but actually is worth like $1 million, and they'd be like, they have no clue. Something that I could steal. I mean, the only thing I've ever stolen in my life was a crossword puzzle at like, I'm pretty sure it was at HEB when I was like 6 years old. I took it thinking it was like a free little pamphlet. Turns out wasn't. Got home with it and my parents were like, what is this? And I was like, well, it's just a free crossword puzzle book. And they were like, no, it's not. And I was like, oh my gosh, you mean to tell me I just stole? They were like, yes, you did. So I had to go back up to the local HEB, which for those of you not in Texas, that's the local grocery store. And I had to go turn it back in and apologize to the manager. And I didn't even know I had stolen. That was really mean of my mom and dad. They were trying to teach me a life lesson. I'm just kidding. It really wasn't that scarring, but so that was really not fun. I got caught and I wasn't even trying to steal. So I don't feel like, I don't know. I really.
Your guilty conscience would eat you.
Yeah, it's not fun for me. It really isn't.
That's no fun,
I know. That's why I'm thinking, like, you know, you watch a movie like, what was that old movie? Oh, with Sean Connery, Entrapment. Do you ever remember that movie? Or like what's a recent art thief? Oh, well, even like we just watched Bad Guys with the Kids, or I'm trying to think of Red Notice. There's different art theft kind of movies where it's like some sort of art thief with a team. A team would be fun. Make it more fun. So, you know, you can call in your person like Chloe from 24 and be like, Chloe, there's a firewall. I need you to get into this, hack this password. And she's like, I'm on it. And like immediately it's open.
So now you've built a whole life around this.
Pretty
apparently.
Much. This sounds actually way more fun.
This isn't just a crossword puzzle. This isn't just a one-off anymore.
No.
This is a, like, you've become.
Yeah.
A...
If the Mona Lisa disappears in the next month, you'll know where, you'll know whose basement it's hiding in.
We don't have a basement.
Exactly. It's actually going to be hanging up in our bedroom. Okay.
All right. So does a person's name influence the person they become?
I would say yes.
How so?
I mean... Satan's name kind of fits him, don't you think? I mean, no, okay, the reason I say yes is because, well, first I was thinking no, because it's just a generational thing. When my parents were naming us, you know, kids were named like Susan. Nobody knows what Susan means. It's a great name. Or, you know.
We just lost all the listeners named
no,
Susan.
I have some Susans who listen, and I know they like this podcast. So don't just bear with me. I'm just saying, I don't know the meaning of the name Susan, you know? Now I feel like there's been a resurgence in the last 20 or so years where people name their kids because, you know, the name has some significance, you know, or some meaning to it. But then you think back to the Bible, and so, you know, it's like, you will be named Methuselah. And I don't know what that means. But there's like usually a significance attached to it, you know? And even like names that change, Sarai to Sarah or Abram to Abraham, you know? So it's always kind of, names have always been a big deal, you know? But I do think there's something to, like, I mean, for example, you've always wanted to name Opie. Our third child, you always want to name him Buck. which I always knew was a terrible idea.
That would be a strong name.
No.
It would Buck be Scarborough?
A terrible name of week.
Nobody's going to mess with that kid on the playground.
Okay. Well, people are also going to be terrified of that kid on the playground. Okay? So we named him Opie. Good compromise. We both like the name. But now, anybody who knows Opie, if you're listening, you know, it just fits him. You know, it's like Opie could not be named by any other name but Opie Jack Scarborough. And it just absolutely fits. That cute little stinker of a kid, you know? So I do think there's something to it. But on a more significant, like a deeper level, I do think that like praying and speaking things over people as far as like even when it's attached to a name, I think that that has significance. I mean, think about Charlotte Ray, her daughter's name. We gave her that name, you know, and have always prayed that she would be a blessing and a joy for those around her, and she is, you know. Final answer.
All right,
sticking to it.
I'll take your word for it.
To find show notes for this and past episodes, or to engage on a deeper level, you can go to wovenministry.com/podcast. If you enjoy what you hear so far, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps listeners find and share this feed. If you'd like to tell us what you enjoyed about this podcast or ask your hard question, you can call us at 512-815-2446. That's 512-815-2446. You'll simply leave a voicemail with what's on your mind, and we might just include your voice on a future episode. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown. Recording and production by Tim Scarborough. I'm Whitney Scarborough, and we'll be back here with more very soon. Thanks for listening.